Hello, my name is Chip Lang. You're listening to Total EM. I'm with Brian Lin covering the SEMPA 2017 conference, and we want to talk about the golden hour when it comes to wound closure. There's a little bit of a myth. There's a little bit of stuff. We're still trying to learn from it. Brian, can you explain the golden hour to us and what it means?
Sure, Chip. And actually, it's not just a golden hour. It's what we call the golden period. I don't actually have a time frame to give you because it's so hotly contested, but let me give you a little bit of the context and the history of it so you can understand where the problem comes from. So if you talk to any surgeon or refer to any surgical literature, they'll most often reference 6 hours as the golden period, meaning 6 hours after a traumatic wound has occurred, it's too dangerous to perform a primary closure of that wound. So where does that actually come from? Well, this concept actually comes from a turn of the century study, meaning like an 1897 study or something like that, by a lab scientist physician who performed a study where he lacerated guinea pigs artificially in his lab, and then he inoculated the wound with feces, and then he waited to see how long it would take for those guinea pigs to die of sepsis, and if you could save them by excising that wound and closing and cleaning that wound. And he found that 6 hours seemed to be the sweet spot for those animals surviving. Now, if you ask me, thinking about guinea pigs inoculated with feces doesn't really approximate what we're doing when it comes to traumatic laceration repair. But yet somehow this 6 hour golden period has stuck. Now, over the last few decades, people have done a lot of research to try to better define what the golden period actually is. The problem is that nobody can really agree on what the best golden period is. I think most of us in emergency medicine agree that it's probably longer than 6 hours, but then what's that magic number? 12 hours? 18 hours? Would you feel comfortable closing a wound 24 hours after it occurred? You know, even our professional societies are a little bit out of date in figuring out or in defining for us what the best time period is. If you look at ACEP's most recent policy statement on this, which is actually pretty outdated, and ACEP itself acknowledges it's outdated, they recommend a golden window of about 12 hours after a traumatic laceration has occurred. So what is the right number? Well, the problem with trying to figure out where that sweet spot lies is it's really hard to construct a study that can answer that question. And the reason for that is just inherent to the problems with the traumatic laceration itself. Lacerations are not just are a heterogeneous pool. There's so many different confounders that go into a laceration. Host factors, for example, is the patient on steroids? Does the patient have diabetes or other factors which affect healing? Wound factors, is the wound highly contaminated? Is the wound in an area of the body that's more contaminated? As you see, all these factors make it difficult to isolate the single question of how long is too long. So I think the best study that looked at this was actually published by Dr. James Quinn, who's out of Stanford, a couple of years back, where he looked not just at the golden period, but at a whole host of factors related to increased risk of infection with regards to closure of traumatic lacerations. And what he found were that there were a couple of different factors that played out and were important in affecting rates of wound infection. These included longer lacerations, lacerations greater than 5 centimeters, lacerations which were located on the lower extremities, presumably dirtier areas of the body, patients with immunocompromising conditions like diabetes. But what was interesting is that in his study, there was no time period that played out as being specifically associated with a higher risk of infection, suggesting that this concept of the golden period in isolation just really doesn't exist. And what we really need to be doing is thinking about the patient, all the host factors that go into infection, the wound itself, all the factors of the wound that go into infection, and think about that in context of how old the wound is when we decide on whether to perform a primary closure.
All brilliant points, Brian. And one thing just branching off of that, because it kind of led to part of the discussion too, is about dog bites, and specifically about you had a patient where it was a dog bite through the lip and you actually close in. I think many of us agree that that is an appropriate type of wound to close. You'd be careful with it, but it's still an appropriate wound to close. Do you think you can talk a little bit about some of the pros and cons with closing dog bite wounds and when it might be a good idea? Just some of the basics that you covered in the lecture today.
Sure thing, Chip. So the case I gave an example of was a real patient that I saw just a couple months ago, a very pretty 19-year-old female who unfortunately got bit Right across her lip, her upper lip, crossing the vermilion border, you could see the outline of the dog's upper and lower jaw right across her lip. It was a pretty horrible injury. She came in crying in distress, and of course I wanted to do the best I could for that patient. So it got me thinking about, you know, what is the evidence for and against primary closure of this laceration caused by a dog bite? Now, I think we all know and acknowledge that a dog's mouth is a dirty place, probably the second dirtiest next to like a human mouth, in terms of different bacteria that can lead to wound infection. But I think we would also all acknowledge that we don't want to leave a horrible scar on a pretty young lady's face or really anybody's face. There have been a couple studies over the years that have looked at the increased risks and rates of infection associated with dog bites, animal bites, and human bites. Most recently, there was a study that I believe came out of China, which supported the primary closure of dog bites, specifically dog bites that were located on the face, showing that there were essentially equal low rates of infection for patients who had primary closure of their dog bite wounds on the face, versus patients who did not have primary closure. And the patients who had primary closure had a shorter time to healing of their wounds by just a couple of days. So this actually favored the primary closure of dog bites on the face. This wasn't a perfect study, but it was pretty darn good. I believe they had about 600 patients, and it was a randomized controlled trial. A couple things that will always confound a study like this and make it hard to know what to do with the results are, there are probably a lot of things that happened that made the outcome so good. There was probably a lot of attention paid to cleansing of the wounds, to making sure the wounds were adequately prepared to minimize that risk of infection. And that wasn't standardized across the board, so it's hard to know how that played in. But it is some pretty good compelling support for you when you want to do a primary closure of a dog bite wound on the face. Now, I will say the jury is a little bit more out for dog bite wounds elsewhere on the body. This is either not as well studied or not supported by the evidence that exists.
That was another superb podcast that was done with Brian Lynn. So grateful to have Brian Lynn be able to come on and talk with us in this kind of two-part section where we were able to talk about, in the first part, different techniques with primary closure, and then some of the more pearls regarding the golden period of wound closure, as well as closing dog bite wounds, because there's a lot of dogma between those. And speaking of dogma, he has some great additional resources on his website that are perfect for you to read and look through. It's well cited. He's got great information on there. Highly recommend that you go to his website, which is also in the show notes, to learn a little more about wound closure in general. Again, this is something that was part of the SIMPA 360 conference for 2017. There is virtual SIMPA. You can actually watch the conference from there too. I believe it's still available for you as well. So if this is something that you're interested in, you really enjoy the content, for whatever reason you couldn't make it, or you're like me and just want to have a backup to be able to watch for future reference or be able to show with your colleagues or whatever else you have planned, this is a valuable resource. I have no vested interest with it. I just highly recommend it because it's a great product and because it was amazing being there in person, but I understand people have to work. Who knows? Maybe I have to work next year. Hopefully I'll be able to come back and do a lot of the same stuff that I was able to do this year, though. Big thanks to all those like Fred Wu who made that happen. There are a lot of people at SIMPA 360 to thank, though, but it's just perfect that we could do this and that we could talk to all these wonderful people who were able to talk with me. There are a lot more that I still need to record later. As mentioned with the move, there's going to be a lot of challenges coming with that up ahead, but we're going to try and make this the best podcast we can and try and get more of that great content out there in the future. But until next time, continue to provide total care everywhere.